పాదపరమహంస పరిబ్రజగాచార్య అష్టోత్తరశత శ్రీ శ్రీమాన్ భక్త సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి మహారాజుల ప్రభుపాదికి అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ బృందకి నామాచార్య శ్రీ హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి స్వయం సహో శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త బృందకి శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధా కృష్ణ గోప గోపినాథ శ్యామకుండ రాధా గుండగిరి గోవర్ధానికి బృందావన్ ధామకి మాయపూర్ ధామకి త్రిపురి ధామకి జగన్నాథ్పురి ధామకి ద్వారకాపురి ధామకి గంధమాయకి యమునమాయకి తులసీదేవికి భక్తిదేవికి సామవేద భక్త బృందకి గౌ ప్రేమనంది. Glory to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Shupadaya, Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nidhinamine, Namaste Sarasudevam, Gauravani Prajarine, Narvishesha Shunyavadi, Pashchatya Deshadharine. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం నమో వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
ఓం అజ్ఞానతిమిరాంధస్య జ్ఞానాంజనశలాకయ చక్షురుమిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీగురవే నమః. శ్రీచైతన్యమనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదా మహ్యం దదాదిం స్వపదాందియం. వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీపురం వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణ రఘునాథాన్వితం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్య దేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణ పదం సహగణ లలితం శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగల్పదే గోపేశ గోపికా కాంద రాధా కాంద నమోస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచన గౌరాంగే రాధే వృందావనేశ్వరే వృషభానుసుతే దేవి ప్రణమామి హరి ప్రియే. వాంచకల్పదరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధూభ్యైవ చ పదీనానాం భవనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభో నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసాది గౌరభక్త బృంద. హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే. శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. శ్రీమదాధ్యాయ నమః. సర్వత్ర గోవింద నామ సంకీర్తనం గోవింద గోవింద. పార్థాయ ప్రతిబోధితాం భగవదం నారాయణేన స్వయం వ్యాసేన గ్రథితాం పురాణమునినాం మధ్యే మహాభారతం. అద్వైతామృతవర్షిణీం భగవతీం అష్టాదశాధ్యాయినీం అంబ త్వామనుసంధదామి భగవద్గీతే భవద్వేషిణీం. ప్రపన్న పారిజాతాయ తోత్రవేత్రైకమానయే జ్ఞానముద్రాయ కృష్ణాయ గీతామృతదుహే నమః. వసుదేవసుదం దేవం కంసజానూరమర్దనం దేవగీ పరమానందం కృష్ణం వందే జగద్గురుం. సర్వోపనిషదోగావో దోగ్ధా గోపాలనందన పార్థో వల్స సుధీర్భోక్త దుగ్ధం గీతామృతం మహేల్. మూగం కరోతి వాచాలం பங்கம் லங்கயதே கிரிம் எல் கிருபாதமஹம் வந்தே பரமானந்த மாதவம். யப்ரஹ்மா வருணேந்திர ருத்ர மருதஸ்த்வன் வந்தி திவ்யை ஸ்தவை வேதை சாங்கபதை க்ரமோபனிஷதை காயந்தியம் சாமகாஹம் ஞானாவஸ்திததத்கதேன மனசோ பஷ்யந்தியம் யோகினோ யஸ்யாந்தம் ந விதுசுரா சுரகணை தேவாய தஸ்மை நம. சோ வி வில் ஸ்டார்ட் வித் பகவத்கீதா டுடே தி ஃபர்ஸ்ட் சாப்டர். லைக் ஃபர்ஸ்ட் சாப்டர் இஸ் தி ஆக்சுவலி அப்சர்விங் தி ஆர்மிஸ் இன் த பேட்டில் ஃபீல்டு குருக்ஷேத்ரா. So basically the first chapter is referring to the background of Bhagavad Gita, how Bhagavad Gita was spoken and under what circumstances, and the events that has led to speaking Bhagavad Gita. All that has come in the first chapter. Actually Bhagavad Gita is a very difficult book to fully understand. Great acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Shankaracharya and others, they have given their commentaries with very deep penetration into the subject matter because of the complexities of the topic that is covered in the Bhagavad Gita, as we discussed last Sunday. The difficulty in understanding Bhagavad Gita comes from the point that the complete knowledge of the Upanishads, Krishna has managed to put through the 700 verses in such an excellent manner that even the great sages and the great authorities on the Vedic culture were impressed by Krishna's capacity to summarize things in such a beautiful manner. And this is exactly what Krishna has done in the 11th canto also. The knowledge in the Vedas, the knowledge in the Upanishads and knowledge in all the Smritis, everything Krishna has brought together and summarized in such a way in the Bhagavad Gita that the one of the great acharyas commented about it, that if Krishna could bring the whole universe into his mouth and showed it to Mother Yashoda, exactly the same way Krishna has done with the Vedas also. That is how he has compared. If Krishna could bring the whole creation within the mouth and show it to Mother Yashoda, which was a pastime he performed at this time of the year, during this month, in Vrindavanam, when he was a little boy. So, if Krishna could do that, exactly the same thing Krishna has done again by bringing the whole message of the Upanishads into Bhagavad Gita. That was the success of the importance of Bhagavad Gita. And it's because of this reason only, precisely, why Bhagavad Gita is accepted as one of the three processes in which the Vedic authorities have based their commentaries. I mentioned before, Prasthanatrayam as it's called, Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Sutram and the major 10 Upanishads. They are the three different literature on which all the acharyas have commented. So therefore, Bhagavad Gita has a very unique position. Not only it has got a unique position, although it was spoken in the middle of Mahabharata war, it should have been normally linked to the Mahabharatam and Ramayanam, which is known as the Itihasas. But on the other hand, Bhagavad Gita was not left with them, rather it was brought up and left it with Brahma Sutram and the other Upanishads. So that shows the significance of Bhagavad Gita. And at the same time, as I mentioned, the difficulty in understanding the Bhagavad Gita because of the higher level of transcendental knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, and the mind and the conditioned nature of our mind, our prarabdham and all our the modes of nature, everything is preventing us to understand Bhagavad Gita properly. So this is the background of that. So when the battlefield of Kurukshetra was fully covered by the armies, somewhere like different people have different figures given on that, but apparently about 6.4 million people were killed in that battle of Kurukshetra. So you can imagine that so long ago also, we consider that the population has come up now, but actually it is not true. The population was high at different times in the history. In fact, many Puranas are saying that after Krishna's departure from this world, for about 1,000 years, the material conditions in the Bharatavarsham was so high that it was so good that the spiritual life was very, very vibrant immediately after Krishna's departure at that time. So like this in the history you will find, we don't have a recorded history of all these things, but from the Puranas they have given some indications of the time after Krishna's departure from this world, and also at the time of Kurukshetram, how this war happened in Kurukshetram and the background behind it. So roughly we could say that 6.4 million people were killed in that battle, but prior to this battle has happened, many, many other things happened. It is a long story to go back into Mahabharata, but very, very minimum to be to understand that this battle has happened within the family. It is a family quarrel actually. So to say that between the Kauravas and the Pandavas. Kauravas were the children of Dhritarashtra, King Dhritarashtra, and Pandavas were the children of King Pandu. And Dhritarashtra and Pandu were brothers. So somehow or the other, due to certain circumstances, Pandu died. Kunti Devi, the wife of Pandu, had to look after the children, the five Pandavas, and she took care of them all along with Krishna's support and help, under Krishna's protection. Unfortunately for Dhritarashtra, he had 100 children, but none of them were interested in religious principles. And the result was that there was an enmity developed between the Kauravas, or the children of Dhritarashtra, and Pandavas, the children of Pandu. Now, this is the beginning of the cause of Mahabharata war. The seed for the war was sown at the Rajasuya sacrifice when Draupadi insulted Duryodhana, and from then on, that was according to Krishna's plan behind it, that this should happen, that Duryodhana should be insulted there, and Duryodhana decided to take revenge. And when the whole the war was building up, or events that were preparing, or preparing for the war, at that point the fire immediately started. The spark was fired by Draupadi. Draupadi was behind it, and all the unfortunate incidents from then on it developed. So what we are concerned about is that the background of Mahabharata war is like this, and Duryodhana, who is the center pin of these Kauravas, was in no way interested in any of the religious principles, nor he was interested in making any compromise with the Pandavas in the war. So automatically Dhritarashtra, who should have stepped in and controlled his children, did not do so due to his own weakness in the heart. And this unfortunate situation, what went through Dhritarashtra, is discussed in Mahabharatam, is discussed in Harivamsham, it discussed in Vishnupuranam, it discussed in Bhagavadam, and it discussed in many other literature as well. That Dhritarashtra's incapacity or inability to control his children due to his excessive attachment for them. And that is what has caused them. And you can see that in the Bhagavad Gita also. Because in the first verse itself, that is very obvious how that attachment has turned into a kind of a craziness, that he was... before the war began, he sent Sanjaya to negotiate a peace with the Pandavas. So when Sanjaya went to see the Pandavas, Dhritarashtra's mind was working in a different direction. That is what that first verse will tell you, that Dhritarashtra uvaja dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveda yuyulsava mamaga pandavas cheva kima kuruvada Sanjaya. That why it was spoken like this, you will see from that verse, Dhritarashtra is asking a question there to Sanjaya. Sanjaya has already acknowledged that he was able to witness the war, he was able to see everything but sitting in the palace with Dhritarashtra. This was Sanjaya's good fortune. How could that happen? Because of the mercy from Vedavyasa Maharshi. He has acknowledged that at the end of Bhagavad Gita, you will find his acknowledgement on that. Vyasa prasada ashutavan edal guhyatamam param. Sanjaya says there, Vyasa prasadaya, because of Vedavyasa Maharshi's prasadam, because of Vedavyasa Maharshi's kindness, that it was possible for him to hear to report about the battlefield and everything what was happening. So, who all heard Bhagavad Gita? Sanjaya has heard Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna has heard Bhagavad Gita. and everything was reported to Dhritarashtra by Sanjaya. And that is the saying how it has been said. But what is interesting in that verse is you will find there, Dhritarashtra is asking one important question there. In Dharma Kshetram, which is the place of religious principles, Kurukshetram, which is the battlefield, Samaveda Yuyulsava, they were enthusiastic to fight the war. Sudrakshan Yuyulsa are the thing means which is kind of to preparing themselves for the battle. Mamaga Pandavas Chaiva Kimakuruvada Sanjaya. That what did the Pandavas do, Sanjaya? This is what Dhritarashtra was asking. Normally, if you are asking something about the war, you will ask from about both sides, isn't it? But Dhritarashtra didn't ask like that. He asked only one question to Sanjaya. Fine, what is the Pandavas doing there? In other words, already his mind was so attached to Duryodhana, he wanted to know whether there was any change of mind from the Pandava side. This is how shrewd that Dhritarashtra was. He was only interested to know because few days before the war, Dhritarashtra Maharaj sent Sanjaya with a message to Pandavas. And the message was like this, that my children, they will not listen. Because a lot of negotiations have gone on prior to the war. Krishna himself went to negotiate on behalf of the Pandavas. And prior to that, in the Bhagavatam you will find Krishna, after killing Kamsa, he sent Akrura to Dhritarashtra to speak to him about peace. And that prayers of Akrura and that verses in the Bhagavatam are very interesting because Akrura goes to see Dhritarashtra. They are all relatives. Kunti Devi's brother and Vasudeva's brother is Akrura. Akrura goes to see to Dhritarashtra on request from Krishna. After Kamsa was killed, the first thing Krishna did was to send Akrura to go and see Dhritarashtra and to talk to him and find out the welfare of Kunti Devi and the children. So when he went there to see Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra was in no mood to listen about Krishna. And Akrura gave very strong indications to Dhritarashtra who Krishna is. It is mentioned very, very categorically in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is behind the Pandavas and asked Dhritarashtra to take note of it. And Dhritarashtra, on the other hand, also mentioned to Akrura that he fully understands that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and he will control the whole thing behind the show. He is going to call the shots. In other words, Krishna is going to decide who will win and who will lose. And Krishna will control the battle all the way through, which lasted 18 days altogether. So, all these things were known to Dhritarashtra. But at the end of the conversation, Dhritarashtra says to Akrura that there is not a lot I can do about it. My children won't listen to me. They will not listen to me. The only hope I have is if the Pandavas listen. If they listen, then there is some hope. And Akrura said to Dhritarashtra that Pandavas are only fighting, they are only proceeding on the basis on religious principles. They are not simply fighting for something which they don't want unnecessarily. They don't want this war. But if that is what is going to happen, then you will be totally held responsible for that. Dhritarashtra answers to that question. In Mahabharatam, it's a big discussion and goes on between Vidura also. There he mentions to Vidura that sometimes in this world that we know what is dharma, what is correct thing to do, but we are unable to do it. Isn't it? Sometimes it happens like that. It says the word is, way it is explained is this, Janami dharmam najami pravrti. I know dharmam, what it is, Dhritarashtra says. Janami dharmam najame pravrti, but I can't do it, he says. Janami adharmam najame nivrti. I know what is adharmam means and what adharmam we are going to do, but I am not able to get out of it. This is our position in this world. Every one of us, we are controlled by these two lines. Janami dharmam najame pravrti, janami adharmam najame nivrti. All of us are controlled by these principles. And just only to indicate, Vedavyasa is mentioned in this Mahabharatam that Krishna controls every one of us. from within and outside. Inside as well as outside, Krishna is consoling us. Only thing is, we don't recognize it. The great sages, they recognize it, they see it. So therefore, they have no confusion about life. We have confusion. Why? Because we have accepted that we are the controlling our destiny. To such an extent, we have taken it on board. So, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, in different places, you will find Krishna, some of the instructions, Shri Bhagavani Vajam, Prakrite Kriyamana Ni Gunai Karmani Sarvasha Ahangara Vimudhalpa Kartaha Nirivanyade. There were so many places, Krishna is saying this again and again. Living energy under the three modes of material nature thinks himself to be the doer. And he starts identifying with it and he reaps the results from that. Because of the false ego inside, Ahangara Vimudhalpa, the foolish person, Kartaham Nirivanyade, I am the performer, he thinks like that. Another instance, Krishna again says that Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Kriddeshe Arjuna Tishtadi Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Arudhani Mayaya. Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying this, Ishvara Sarva Bhutani, in all living entities, Kriddeshe Arjuna Tishtadi, I am seated within there. Krishna says to Arjuna, I am seated in everyone's heart. And what happens? Brahmayan Sarva Bhutani, all the living entities are being rotated in this material world under the three modes of nature, which is Maya. Brahmayan Sarva Bhudani, exactly like Yantra Arudhani Maya. Just like on a cogwheel, what you see in the festival places, where there is a wheel which is turned, giant wheel as they call it, which turns around, goes up, comes down, and people sit on that, they go to the top, and they come down, they go to the top. Like this, through different bodies, we are rotated one after the other. So 8.4 million different species. And so, through these different species, we are continuously rotated. This is the interesting thing what Vedavyasa says there. So, in Bhagavad Gita, you will find all these different things. So, exactly this is what was Dhritarashtra's situation. Dhritarashtra was helpless. He said to Akruya that I can't do anything about it. So, then there was the peace negotiations with Vidura and Dhritarashtra. Vidura goes to see Dhritarashtra, talks to him for many, many nights. He spoke to him. And Dhritarashtra will listen to everything and eventually he will exactly answer the same thing what he told Akrura also. He said, I can't do anything. If Pandavas can do something about it, then we can avoid this war. As the war got closer and closer, just a few days before that, Dhritarashtra started losing the sleep. He couldn't sleep at all because he knew that standing behind all these Pandavas and all the other people, Krishna is waiting there to smash all these my children. That was clear to him by now. And whatever he has spoken to Duryodhana, nothing will go into his head. He was known as Kali's complete incarnation of Kali Yuga. That was Duryodhana. Duryodhana was like that. So, automatically Dhritarashtra has lost sleep and he couldn't sleep. And the night before, also again he called Vidura. And in the middle of the night, saying to Vidura, Vidura, I'm not getting sleep at night. Vidura says, what can I do? I have given you everything. There is only one choice now you have. And what is that? When Dhritarashtra asked that question, in the Srimad Bhagavatam also it's mentioned, that Mahabharatam it is much more elaborate. He says to him that you have to expel your son from this country completely. Throw him out from here and install Yudhishthiraj as the king and then there will be no war. You can escape from this calamity. And again Dhritarashtra was the same unfortunate situation. He couldn't do anything about it. So the war was going to happen. So as a last resort, he sent Sanjaya to talk to the Pandavas. And when he came to see Pandavas, Sanjaya knew very well what he was doing was not the right thing. Because on behalf of Dhritarashtra, what can he say to... But he has to listen to Dhritarashtra because he is his emissary or representative. He has to go. And he has to go and deliver the message to Yudhishthira. Yudhishthira and others were in the forest listening, waiting for this message to come from Dhritarashtra. And Sanjaya came and saw them. And when he spoke to Yudhishthira Maharaj, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula and Sahadeva, they were all there. None of them got very upset except Bhima. Bhima wanted to finish Sanjaya then and there because he said this is nonsense what he is coming telling us now. And Dhritarashtra is coming and telling us, preaching to us about religious principles who have stuck to it from the very beginning. This was their point of view. So this Sanjaya somehow was left off the hook. Nothing happened there because Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was a very, very decent and gentle person, who stuck to the religious principle very strongly, that Yudhishthira Maharaj said to Sanjaya to go back and not to pursue this matter further. So that was left behind, and when Sanjaya spoke to them, the message from Dhritarashtra was that my children won't listen to me, but you are such good people. You are very pious people. You believe in religious principles, and you are also very kind-hearted people, and you have all the good qualities of the great sages. Because of that, would you not concede now not to go ahead with this war and withdraw yourself from this? This was the... Sanjaya praised the Pandavas a lot, as Dhritarashtra wanted him to, and after praising, he put forward this request to the Pandavas. Yudhishthira told Sanjaya that we'll think over the matter and we'll make the decision. Sanjaya came back and reported the same thing to Dhritarashtra. Now you may ask why this Dhritarashtra has pursued this policy, because he still had a lot of faith in the Pandavas, not in the Kauravas so much. And the result of this visit to Pandavas is this first chapter. That is, you can understand how the link is coming from. Because when Pandavas were told by Sanjaya about their good qualities, Arjuna's mind started getting a little bit concerned. And that is why, as soon as he came in the battlefield and Krishna showed him the army on both sides, Arjuna started thinking, how can I fight? I am a good person. My heart is sinking. I cannot fight with all these people. We have such good qualities. So you can see, Dhritarashtra's trick has worked. It has affected Arjuna. And that is why that chapter is titled as Arjuna Vishada Yoga. Arjuna's Vishadam, or Arjuna's distress. And that is what that first chapter is called. Arjuna Vishada Yoga. Because, purely because, our Dhritarashtra's message through Sanjaya had an effect on Arjuna. And that happened in this way. When he came to the battlefield, Arjuna decided not to fight. Completely unusual for Arjuna. Arjuna never did that any time before. Arjuna is such a personality. He is a pure Kshatriya, has such a blood in him that on no instance once before he has withdrawn from a battle. He is the type of personality Arjuna is. He never knew what fear means. This is the type of person Arjuna is. And that Arjuna, for the first time in the battlefield, is saying that I could not fight a war. Shamodama Yuddheja Pyabalay Shaujyam Tejo Dhritir Dakshyam Yuddheja Pyabalayanam Dhanam Damascha Yuddheja Pyabalayanam Dhanam Ishwara Bhavasya Kshatrakarma Swabhavajam. Kshatriya's qualities mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. If you apply any of these qualities, the only person you can say 100% you can apply is Arjuna. The Kshatriya qualities. What are they? That Shaujyam, heroic nature. Tejas, that strength in the character. Tejas, Dhriti, Dakshyam, intelligence. And Dakshyam also the capacity to forgive people. Shaujyam, Tejo, Dhritir, Dakshyam. And then the next one, very important one. Yuddheja, Pyabalayanam. Not to run away from the war. Running away from the battlefield is not a heroic thing for a Kshatriya. And you can never expect that from Arjuna under any circumstances. Yuddheja Pyabalayanam Dhanam Ishwara Bhavasya. Always the controlling nature and charity also. Dhanam Ishwara Bhavasya Kshatrakarma Swabhavajam. These are the qualities by which Kshatriyas work, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. So because it is like that, our Arjuna has no chance of becoming a coward or being frightened of fighting a war and withdrawing from that. Question didn't arise. But in spite of that, in this particular situation you find that Arjuna has decided to not to fight. So this was, some acharyas are commenting on that, that it's purely because of the message from Dhritarashtra had a little effect on Arjuna on that day. Arjuna had fought wars in many instances. You look back into Arjuna's previous battles, what he has brought. In fact, he has fought a battle with Lord Shiva and beat Lord Shiva with his bow. Lord Shiva was very pleased with Arjuna's heroic nature. So he took the dress of a hunter, and Sri Parvati with Lord Shiva came as a hunter woman. Together in the forest, they were hunting when they met Arjuna. Arjuna didn't know it was Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva wanted to fight with Arjuna and enjoy the fight. And in that process, They fought so vigorously. At the end, Arjuna beat Lord Shiva's head with his bow. And such was the courage in Arjuna. And at the end, Lord Shiva revealed his form. Arjuna at that point fell down at his feet and paid his obeisances. Lord Shiva handed over to him the Pashupatam, the famous bow, which was with Arjuna throughout the battle. So this is Arjuna. Arjuna is not an ordinary personality. A very heroic person, very courageous person, all full of Kshatriya blood and full of Kshatriya qualities. In spite of that, in this battlefield you find, as soon as he came to the battlefield, first thing was, after hearing from Krishna, the first few verses, Krishna is present, the Vedavyas is presenting there, the battlefield. I'll just read through that and I'll continue to come back to this again.
Dhritarashtra uvacha, dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveda yuvilsava mamaga pandavascheiva kimakuruvada sanjaya. Sanjaya uvacha, drishtvadu pandavanigam yudham duryodhanastada ajarya uvasangam yarajavasanava bravil. Pashyaidam pandavutranam ajarya mahadinchavum yudham dravadavutrena tavashishyana dhimada. Atra shura maheshvasa bhima arjuna samayidhi yudhano viradascha dravadascha maharatha.
So, in those few verses, what you will find there, that Sanjaya is reporting to Dhritarashtra the lineup of the armies on the battlefield, how the different great personalities, Bhishma, Drona, and Drishtagetu, Chaikidana, and all the other great kings who have assembled in the battlefield, and prior to this assembly, why he has given this, the description of the battlefield was that during the days running up to the war, Duryodhana had the feeling that Pandavas will never be able to mobilize a big army. This was in the Mahabharata mentioned like this. The reason being that Pandavas were not in a strong position. They were in the forest for so many years. And in addition to that, their contacts, and they didn't have any kingdom. Whereas Duryodhana's attitude was, all these great personalities like Bhishma, Drona, and so many others, they are all on my side. And so many other kings also have offered support to him. So he was thinking that Yudhishthira Maharaj will never be able to mobilize a big army. Because of that, he was expecting a very poor lineup of the army for the Pandavas. But when he saw the army who was there with Yudhishthira Maharaj, and behind all that Krishna, Duryodhana was a little bit perturbed. And so what he did was, immediately he moved on to see his commanders, particularly Bhishma and Drona, and started reporting to them that why this has happened like this, that I never expected in my mind that Pandavas will be able to raise such a big army. And that was one of the concerns of Duryodhana. Duryodhana was so shocked to see that there were so many kings still supporting Yudhishthira Maharaj. Krishna has prompted many, almost all the kings have joined in the battle, and those kings who are supporting Yudhishthira Maharaj is also many because of being encouraged by Krishna. So that was one concern. Secondly, the morale of the Kauravas were very poor in the battle because they knew they were fighting an unreasonable battle. Yudhishthira Maharaj should have had the kingdom. But on the other hand, the kingdom is with Duryodhana. And Duryodhana was not very much liked for his adharmic way or irreligious way of executing things. And therefore, the army also was very demoralized. You can imagine in any battle,
If the army is not in good spirits, they can't fight. Whereas on the other hand, all those who supported Yudhishthira Maharaj, they were in full spirit, fighting spirit. So the morale was poor for the Kauravas. Morale was very high on the Pandavas side. And second, there was two things, what is important to note. Because of all these things, Duryodhana went and spoken to these commanders, Bhishma and Drona. And interesting thing here is, Bhishma was hearing everything, but his heart was with Krishna there on the other side. You can imagine if you have a commander who is fighting for you and he's all the time thinking about the opposite side. That he was so attracted to Krishna as a devotee, and more than that, he could never believe that Pandavas will lose this battle. Because when Krishna was behind, there was no question of losing the battle. And the Bhishma has confirmed this also in his glorification of Krishna much later when he was leaving the body. He said that this war, he said in his glorification, that I already knew who has won the war. And Arjuna was thinking that me, Arjuna, Vijaya, I got this name Vijaya because I won the battle of Mahabharata. But I knew this Vijaya, I could finish him up in 1 second, he said. But behind him, there was the personality with the chariot and the disc in the hand. There was no question of anyone winning the war. So Bhishma has already recognized this. And this Bhishma was asked by Duryodhana, what are we going to do now? So Bhishma knew that he was backing the wrong horse in this. He knew that. There's nothing he could do about it. Due to circumstances, he has fallen into the situation. So anyway, this is one other aspect of this battle. That all these things are behind the scene when Sanjaya has spoken these verses. But at this last verse, you will find there that Krishna decided to blow the conch shell. And that means that we are going to start the war. Isn't it? We are not going to talk anymore. Talking is finished now. So much we have talked so far. But no more talking, action now. So Krishna decided to blow the conch shell. Krishna and Arjuna blew the conch shell. And particularly this blowing of Krishna's conch shell is so important because Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is in control of the sound as well. Everything is under his control. So when he blew the conch shell, it was like the great devotees say that it was like blowing the letter Om. Om was blown, which is very auspicious to speak about the... Because blowing the conch shell means is an auspicious thing for before Vedic sacrifices. So all the mantras in Vedic literature, and every mantra begins with the letter Om. So it has its pranavam. And Krishna says, I am that. Pranava sabavedeshu shabdhaye paurusham nrushu. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita later. So that pranava means me, Om, the letter, I am that, Krishna says. So when Om is spoken, it means that something that's going to follow Om is also very important. And that was Bhagavad Gita. After this is the Bhagavad Gita is coming after that. So in other words, the essence of all the Upanishads, which Krishna has assimilated and summarized in the form of Bhagavad Gita, is going to be spoken. And that is why this conch shell had a significant impact due to that. Because of the way Bhagavad Gita is going to be spoken after that. So, we'll just go through the remaining verses and then come back to it again. Panjajanyam Rishikesho Devadattam Dhananjaya Paundram Dadmo Mahashankam Bhima Karma Upridodaya Ananda Vijayam Raja Kundi Putro Yudhishthira Nagula Sahadevascha Sukhoshamani Pushpagau Kashyascha Varameshwasa Shikhandija Maharaja Drishtadyumno Viradascha Satyangishcha Virajita Dhruvado Draupadeyascha Sarvasha Pradivipade Saubhadrascha Mahabhagu Shankhandadmo Prathak Pradak Nakausa Koshodarsarashtanam Hadayani Vyadayel Nahasya Pradivim Chayivadu Milovinunadayel Adavyavastidan Drishtuva Dartarashtan Kapidvaja Pravarte Shastra Sambadeta Niruddhyam Yubandava Rishikeshandada Vakyam Idamahamahi Padayim. So, if you read all these verses and the translation purport, Srila Prabhupada has given very, very detailed purports for all these verses. Because in order to give a full understanding of the Vedic culture, because there are so many things in this involved, why it is done like this, and Prabhupada has explained that in those purports. So, if you can read that sometime, you will understand the significance of all these verses. But we will go back to a little bit more important things in the first chapter. It is at that point that Krishna has, Arjuna spoke to Krishna that to pull my chariot to the middle of the army. He says to him,
because at this time Arjuna has not spoken yet that he is not going to fight the war. Krishna has he has been saying to them that Arjuna, these all these great personalities who are present there, you can have a look at them. So in order to introduce them to Arjuna, Arjuna also wanted to see them clearly, although he knew who are all there, but to have a very clear understanding whom he has to fight with.
Senayorupayor madhye ratham stavayamechuda yavadeva nirikshaham yodhuga manavastidan.
That who has all come here to fight with me, let me have Achyuta place, move the chariot to the middle of the army, let me have a good look at them. And then Arjuna says,
Kayamaya sahayodhavyam asmin rana samudyame yolsimananame kshaham yedetra samagadaha dhartarashtrasya durpande yudhe priyajagi shavam.
That those people who are enthusiastic to fight the war, and especially these Dhritarashtra's men who have developed such an attitude towards us and prepared to fight the war, let me have a good look at them, saying that the chariot gone in.
Sanjayuvajam evamukto krishigesho gudageshena bharata senayorupayor madhye sthapayitva rathottamam bhishmadrona pramugada sarveshanjamaheekshitam uvajapartavasheidan samavedan kuruniri tatra apashyalsthitan partha pitamratapitamahan acharyan madulan bradan putran pautran sahim sada shushuran suhrudashchaiva senayorupayorabhi tan samiksha sakaundeya sarvan bandhunamastitan kripaya parayavishto vishidanyidamabravil.
That Sanjaya says to Dhritarashtra Maharaj at this time that the army has pulled in, and Dhritarashtra was Krishigesha and Gudakesha, that is Krishna and the Arjuna, they have installed their chariot in between, and they were looking at the army and seeing who all have come. All the relatives, friends, teachers, grandsons, grandchildren, and everyone is listed there.
Arjuna Vaja Drishtu Emam Sajanam Krishna Yulsam Samavastinam Sitandi Mamadatrani Ukanjabari Shushari Vyabadushta Shari Remi Ramahashasya Jayadem.
It was at this time that Arjuna started shivering. He started feeling a great fear in his mind. Why should I fight this battle? This started strongly developing in his mind. And he says to Krishna, when I see all my relatives like this standing next to me, they want to fight with me. I cannot fight, he says. That he says here, Sidhani mama gatrani mukhanja parishu shadim. My face is fully drying up, he says. And I can't do anything about it.
Vaibhadushcha shariryame ramaharshascha jayadim.
That the hair is standing up and I'm unable to do anything fighting this battle.
Gandhi mam sramsa dehasta tokchaiva beridehyade naja shaknam yavastadam brahmati yuvajami manam.
And then he is explaining that Gandivam, what he had with him, is also unable to utilize it to fight.
Nimitanya Pashyani Viridani Keshavam.
There, Arjuna is calling Krishna as Keshava and saying to him that I am seeing all kind of omens which are not very favorable against me. And from now on, right up to the end of the chapter, is Arjuna's lamentation. Arjuna is lamenting at this time. That why should I fight this war? What's the point in doing this? And Arjuna says to Krishna, and Krishna has to listen to all these things. Krishna didn't come to this world to listen to Arjuna's philosophy. So, and Arjuna is talking to Krishna, and so I'm such a learned person. And all that knowledge, what Krishna, Arjuna is, his logic and reasoning here, from now on to the end of the chapter, is Arjuna Vishada Yoga. It is Arjuna's real Vishadam. Arjuna was saying to Krishna that everywhere you can look at,
Naja Shreyona Vashyami Hatva Sajanama Ahave Nagamshe Vijayam Krishna Naja Rajyam Sukha Anijam.
I do not want anything, Krishna. I don't want any happiness in life. I don't want to win this war even. Earlier he called Krishna as Keshava. Now he is calling Krishna himself, the same Krishna he is calling. And saying to him,
Naja Rajyam Sukha Anija,
I don't want happiness by having this country or any kind of happiness like that. Then another few verses.
Kim no Rajyena Govinda, Kim Bhoga Jividenama, Yashamarte Kamshidano, Rajyam Bhoga Sukha Anija.
Then he calls Krishna as Govinda and says to Govinda, what do I want all this for? What's the purpose of living like this?
Yashamarte Kamshidano, no Rajyam Bhoga Sukha Anija.
Rajyam and Bhogam, this empire and gratification from that, all that, I don't want it, he says. What for do I need all this? He's talking like a sannyasi now.
The ime avasida yudhe pranam stekva dhananija acharya vidara putra sadhaiva cha pitamaha.
Then from now on, that if you give up this life in this and acquiring wealth for that purpose, I'm not interested.
Acharya pidara putra sadaiva cha pitamaha.
The teachers like Bhishma, Drona, they are all my teachers, and I have to fight a war with them. And grandfathers, the children, and all the relatives he's listing here.
Pidamaha, madula, shushura, pautra, siyala, sambandhina sada, edan mahandamichami, nadobi madhusudana.
Then he says, Krishna calls Madhusudana and says to him, Madhusudana, I don't want to fight with any of these people. They are all my people. How can I fight with them?
Abhi trailoki rajyasya hedo kimnu mahi krde nihatya dhartarashtana kaapridisya janardana.
Then he calls Krishna as Janardana. In the next verse, says to Janardana, what is the point if I finish up, get all the three worlds, but at the end, if I have killed all these people, what's the point of me having all these three worlds in my control?
Papameva ashraye asman hatvaida adadaina tasmal mahavayam handam dartarashtan sobhandavan sojanam hikadam hatva sukhinasyamama adhavam.
Now he calls, first he called Krishna as Janardana. Now he is calling Krishna as Madhava and says to Madhava, Madhava, what was the point if by doing? Because I know, he says, sin will overcome if I try to kill these people and such aggressors. And how can we be happy by killing such aggressors? How can we be happy by killing our own men? This was Arjuna's words to Krishna. Then,
yadyapena vashyandi loho bahara chedasa kulakshayakritam dosham mitradrohe javadayam kanam emasmavi papadasmani vartidam kulakshayakritam dosham pravashyalpijjana ardhanam.
He says to him that because of loham, because of greed, they don't see any fault in killing relatives or quarreling with us, with all the friends. Why should we, who know this, do such a thing? Arjuna is saying to Krishna, why should we do this? They do not know these things. They are ignorant. They have lobham or greed for wealth and things like that. So they are doing it. But I'm not like that. So why should I do this? He's saying this to Janardana.
Kulakshaye pranashyandi kula dharma sanadana dharme nashte kulam krishnam adharma abhipavatyudam.
Then also my family tradition is such that will be destroyed if I do this. And all the rest of the family will be involved in religious things, in religious practices, he says.
Dharma nashte kulam krishnam adharma abhivavatyuda.
Then what will happen?
Adharma abhivava al krishna pradushyandi kulastriya strishu dushta suvarshneya jayade varna sankara.
Then the result will be, women will become corrupt and then the unwanted progeny will come out of it. Because this is the after effect of a war, that there will be Varnasankaram will happen, and the result of that will be the children born from that will be unwanted progeny. He says like
adharma bhiva krishna padushyandi kula striya strishu dushta asu varshneya jayade varnasankaram sangaro naragayiva kulagnanam kulasya padandi vidrohyesham lupta vindolaga kriyaham.
Then another important point he mentions there, that if I kill all these things, no oblations of food and water for the ancestors will be given, because all the children will be killed, and who will perform all the luptam and pindam udagakriya? Pindam and udagakriya are the ceremonies performed after the death for the departed soul, and who will perform that?
Doshayrede kulajnana varna sangarakaragai ulsadhyande jati dharmam kuladharma aschasha ashwadam.
That the result of all these things will be, there will not be any jati dharmam or kuladharmam or any community type of projects and family welfare. All such activities will be completely devastated by by this death of these people.
Ulsa nukula dharmanam manushyanam janardana narage niyadam vaso bhavati ityanu shushramam.
I have also heard parambara by disciple succession that those who destroy family, they will have family traditions, they will also go to hell. Because normally the Vedic system is that even if you conquer another country, you should not destroy the culture of those people. That is the important thing, because that's the tradition that has been come through for several generations. For example, in the war, many, many battles happen. Many wars have fought in the past also. But the important thing to remember is that on the Vedic system, it was always the practice is that even someone conquers another country, the people should be left alone. Their tradition should not be destroyed. This was followed up to a very, very precise degree by the conquerors all the time. The war is between the armies. It has nothing to do with the people. But unlike in the modern days, we have this practice of destroying people's culture. Whatever culture they have grown up, that destroys the whole society completely. And then you are not able to find a solution to that. And that ends up in further calamity. After that, we are seeing this every time when this happens. In the modern warfare, this is the greatest problem. That we kill people who have nothing to do with any of these things. But generally, the armies are fighting the battle. And when the war, and as far as people are concerned, today I am paying taxes to this government, tomorrow I will pay the taxes to the next government, whoever is in control. But people who are peaceful and who live a peaceful life in this world, their life should not be disturbed. This is the basic principle under any circumstances. So because of this, Arjuna was saying here that if such a thing happen, all the traditions will be destroyed and I'll go to hell.
Ahobadamahalpabam kartum sevasida vayam yadraja sugalobhena handum sojanam udyadam.
That ultimately is lamenting how unfortunate it is that I am prepared to enjoy the royal happiness by killing all these people. Sojanam udyadam.
Edipmanu pradigaram ashastram shastrabanayam dartarashtaranehanyustanme kshemadaram bhavel.
That ultimately Arjuna has spoken like a real sadhu. He is telling them to Krishna, saying to Krishna now that better that they'll kill me instead of and they kill me rather than me killing them, and I don't want to resist them. I want to stay without resistance rather than fighting them, and I'll stay unarmed. And then Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra was enjoying this. This is what Dhritarashtra was enjoying this. This is what he wanted to hear. And this is exactly what he wanted to hear. And his message was working. So when he heard that, he was a little bit happy. So Sanjaya says to him at that point,
Eva muktu arjuna swangena dhomastavva vishal visarajya sasaram chapam
shoga samvidna manasa. That is the word. Visarajya sasaram chapam, through his bow and arrow, Shogasam Vignama Anasa, what am I supposed to do now? Looking at Krishna's face, he sat there. So, that is the Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvadam, Pradama Adhyayam, Arjuna Vishada Yoga Nama. Arjuna is sitting there in this background. This is where this first chapter was spoken. Now, we have to go back to it in little detail. All what has happened now. Imagine this. The background of Mahabharata war, as I mentioned, between the Kauravas and the Pandavas, this is an important thing, because if you look very carefully, you will find there, who are these Kauravas? Kauravas are people who have such demonic qualities in them, isn't it? All the demonic qualities you could find in them, Duryodhana, Dushasana, and all others who are assisting him, Karna, Shakuni, every single one of them, they had developed these demonic qualities to such a degree that everything, the Rajogunam and Tamogunam, what we call as the three modes of material nature, were present in all of them. In all of them, to such a large degree, that is why they were able to function like this. On the other hand, if you look at Pandavas, you see, what do you see there? Pandavas were noble personalities, all of them were devotees, and all of them had high transcendental qualities in them. Very highly principled, religious people. More than everything, they were devotees of Krishna. This was their greatest quality. What does Srimad Bhagavatam say about this? That
Yasyasya Bhaktir Bhagavatya Ginjanai Sarvai Gunai Satra Samasade Sura Harava Bhaktasya Kudo Mahal Guna Manoradhena Sadi Thavado Bahi.
Srimad Bhagavatam, in the beginning you will find Srinarada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, that you may have all the good qualities in this world.
Sarvai gunai satra samasate suraha harav abhaktasya kuto mahal gunaha. that if you are not a devotee of Krishna, what is the point of all these good qualities? This is what Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas before he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. Manoradhena sati dhavado bahi. Because if you are not a devotee, or if you are not taking Krishna's instruction seriously, you are simply on your mental chariot. This is how Narada Muni said to Vedavyas. That's how Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled later. We leave it at that. But coming back to Bhagavad Gita, this particular quality was there among the Pandavas, who were in the mode of goodness. So Satugunam was predominating among the Pandavas. They were devotees. They had all the transcendental qualities in them. So why we should be concerned about this? This, if you look at Mahabharata war, you will find 5,000 years ago, it was a family quarrel has happened, isn't it? A family fought each other. One side was the Kauravas and the other side was the Pandavas. They started, wanted to fight each other 5,000 years ago. After that, so many wars have happened in the history. We are not bothered about any other war, are we? We are only bothered about this particular war. Why? There is a reason behind it. It's not that we took Mahabharata war something very special significance. There is a significance to that. The significance is this. That Arjuna, the Kauravas and the Pandavas have decided to fight. So when they decided to fight in the battlefield in Kurukshetra, Arjuna is saying, I don't want to fight. He wants to pull out from the war. Then the Supreme Personality, Krishna, goes there and says to Arjuna, No, you should fight. You should fight. You know, don't pull out from that. Fight the war, he says. So he is prompting, encouraging him to fight. And so many wars have happened after that. None of that has affected us so much like this war. But this war is special because it is from this war Vedavyasa Maharshi presented Bhagavad Gita to us. If this war hasn't happened, Bhagavad Gita would not have come out. And the way it happened was that Arjuna had to fight the war. On the one hand, Arjuna is feeling that, how can I fight the war? This war has happened. By time, we are not affected by that. It has happened 5,000 years ago. It shouldn't affect us. Why does it? How does it affect us? So by time, it doesn't have any relationship with us. By place, it hasn't got any relationship with us, is it? It has happened somewhere in Kurukshetra. We are 10,000 kilometers away. What do we have to worry about this war? 5,000 years happened in Kurukshetra. How is it going to affect us? No, we are not bothered about that. So by time or by space, it doesn't affect us. Nor, if you consider about the conditions behind it, that in no way it is going to, people involved are not affecting us anyway. So still we are concerned about this war. Why? That is our question. And that is why we have to discuss this in detail. So in order to understand that, if you simply analyze it in this way, that before the war happened, you can see from Arjuna's confusion started. Arjuna started thinking like this, that one side the mind is telling him that Yudhishthira Maharaj is correct in his position. In his position he is right. He had to fight the war because he has tried all the avenues to get his kingdom for which he is rightly entitled. So strictly speaking, Yudhishthira Maharaj is right in fighting the war, isn't it? He is actually justified in fighting the war. But on the other hand, Arjuna is also thinking that Duryodhana is my relatives. How can I fight the war? How can I kill them? They are my relatives, he is thinking. So between these two thoughts, his mind is wavering back and forth. This is what this war is bringing to him. He is completely confused. The words uses iti kartavya dha mudhara. Iti kartavya dha mudhara means not knowing what to do. This was his situation. And it is in this background that we have to understand why Bhagavad Gita is significant to us. Strictly speaking, this Bhagavad Gita, by time, by place, and by the people involved, it applies to the for the whole society, human society, for all time to come, for all the people. Because if you look at yourself in your own mind, if you analyze, you will find you are in the same, caught up in the same dilemma which Arjuna was experiencing. In our own mind, if you look, there are so many good qualities in every one of us, and there are so many bad qualities also in all of us. Every one of us, we have it. Truthfulness, then non-violence, satyam ahimsa, then brahmacharyam, celibacy, asteyam, not stealing anything else, aparigraham. So many good qualities, most of the people have them in their mind. Rarely you will find people without any qualities, any good qualities. Most of the people have good qualities in their heart. But on the other hand, they also have the other side of it. Kamam, lobham, moham, krodham, madham, malsaryam, ragam, dvesham. All these different kinds of things. Means lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment. All sorts of things inside. If you analyze your own mind, you will find both these things, the good things and the bad things, they are coming from the same place, isn't it? They are coming from the same mind. This is the most interesting thing. That sometimes the good things are taking over. Sometimes the bad things are taking over. And in between, we are caught up. This is our problem. Most of the times we are thinking, we do not know what's the right thing to do. And this crisis has not started. The day we started thinking, this crisis has also started. And throughout life, all what's going on is this pull and push between these two forces inside. You see? One side, the good forces are pushing one way. Other side, the bad qualities are pulling in the other direction. And we are caught up in this mess inside. This is our crisis. This is the crisis what we are facing. Exactly like Arjuna was facing in the battlefield. The same crisis is in our mind also. And that crisis continues to exist all the time. I'll give you so many examples. Sometimes you want to be truthful. You want to be truthful. You would like to say truth always. You feel bad about telling lies. But has everyone not experienced in life, sometimes you have to say lies to escape from some situation. Because things are forced upon you in certain ways due to helplessness or due to some unreasonable situation. Sometimes the government themselves force you to tell lies. That's the worst thing to happen. And everyone, particularly about the tax system, you notice this. Everyone is making, and they've got tax consultants and advisors and all sorts of people to tell you how to get out of it. Why? Because the system has been created like this. And you don't want to do it, but often you end up doing it. Why? Because this world is like that. That's the nature of this world. So you can see there the problem. That you don't want to do it, you're forced to do it. When it comes to money, nobody wants to hand it over to the Inland Revenue easily. So then you start consulting all these. Okay, they've got such glorified titles as tax consultants and this directors and financial advisors and whatever you can call them. But ultimately the business is how to cheat the government. That's the principle behind it. If everything was so straightforward, you don't need them, do you? Because you can manage it yourself, just filling it, if it is just ticking the boxes in the form and sending the check to the Inland Revenue. No, it's not. So because it is like that, there are so many systems developed in this world, you're forced to tell lies because of the way the things are controlled by the government. It's not here only, it's all over the world, it's the same thing that's happening. So that's one. Secondly, if you look, dharmam and adharmam. Now you know sometimes what is dharmam. That's the right thing to do. But you can't do it because of you are paratantra. Paratantra means you are under the control of so many other forces in this world. Your own family, the society you will live, the country you will live. And you know that some instances you have no choice. Sometimes you think you are paying money, taxpayers' money. And sometimes if the government abuses it, you are helpless about it. And you also become part and parcel of that whole activity. And you become very helpless about it. And several instances at the job, at the working place, at the offices, and so many instances the same thing can happen. So you know what is dharmam, but you can't stick to dharmam. Adharmam will take over at that time. You are helpless about it. Due to the paratantra. Krishna says in the Bhagavatam also, gam dugdha doham asadinja bhairyam deham paradhinam. Deham is paradhinam. This material body is not yours.
ఇట్స్ అండర్ సంబడి ఎల్సెస్ కంట్రోల్ దిస్ ఈస్ వై ఇట్ ఈస్ లైక్ దట్ దేహం పరాధీనం అసల్ ప్రజాం జాం కృష్ణ సేస్ దేర్ దేహం పరాధీనం యు హావ్ యు ఆర్ థింకింగ్ యు ఆర్ ఫ్రీ యు ఆర్ యాక్చువల్లీ నాట్ ఫ్రీ ఎవ్రీ వన్ ఈస్ పరతంత్రం పరతంత్రం పరాధీనం ఇట్ ఈస్ అండర్ ది కంట్రోల్ ఆఫ్ సో మెనీ పీపుల్ వెన్ యు ఆర్ లివింగ్ ద బాడీ ఇస్ అండర్ వెన్ యు ఆర్ చైల్డ్ ఇట్స్ ద కంట్రోల్ ఆఫ్ ది పేరెంట్స్ దే కంట్రోల్ యువర్ బాడీ వెన్ యు ఆర్ గ్రోన్ అప్ యువర్ వైఫ్ అండ్ చిల్డ్రన్ విల్ కంట్రోల్ యువర్ బాడీ or the employer will control you, your life in this world. Like this, different people control. And even when you die, it's not yours. The foxes or the or fire or who will eat your body. So at what time have you got, you can say this is your body. At no time it's your body. But you are thinking, due to our own illusion, we are thinking that this is my body and I am fully independent to do what I want. But strictly speaking, it's not so. So because it's like that, దేహం పరాధీనం అసలు ప్రజాం చ సో భగవద్గీత కృష్ణ సేస్ లైక్ దట్ సో యూఆర్ నాట్ ఇండిపెండెంట్ టు డూ ఎనీథింగ్ అండ్ బికాస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ లైక్ దట్ ధర్మం అండ్ అధర్మం వీ నో బట్ వీ కాన్ ఫంక్షన్ రైట్ అండ్ రాంగ్ వీ నో వీ కాన్ డూ ఇట్ ట్రూత్ అండ్ ఫాల్స్ వీ నో బట్ వీ కాన్ స్పీక్ ద ట్రూత్ సమ్ ఇన్స్టెన్సెస్ నౌ దిస్ ఈస్ ఆల్ ఇన్ ది నార్మల్ లైఫ్ ది సో కాల్డ్ జెంటిల్మెన్స్ లైఫ్ యూ పుట్ ఇట్ లైక్ దట్ నౌ యూ కమ్ టు ద డివోటీస్ లైఫ్ ఆల్సో ఈస్ దర్ ఎనీథింగ్ డిఫరెంట్ ఇన్ డివోటీస్ లైఫ్ డివోటీస్ ఆల్సో ఆర్ ఇన్ ద సేమ్ బోట్ దే ఆర్ నాట్ డిఫరెంట్ ఇన్ ఎనీవే Devotees will say so many things. They'll say, I'm going to Vrindavan for Kartik. And when I go there, I'll do all the parikramam everywhere. I'll go all the holy places. I will associate with all the great devotees. And you are thinking that, oh, I am got out of all that mess in England. I've come here. Now let me stay in Vrindavan. I don't want to go back because Shastras are saying I should stay in Vrindavan forever. And practice spiritual life here. I should chant the holy name. I don't want to get involved in material life and all. But you know you got a return ticket. You're not gone with a single ticket. You're gone with a return ticket. The day, getting close to the day you have to depart from there, you'll start arranging the taxi straight away. That you should pick me up at such and such a time. And the flight, I should be there at the airport. So when you went to Vrindavan, the first few days you were thinking that I'll execute my spiritual life exactly like the Goswamis have told, living in Vrindavan, right in the middle there, and only engaging chanting the holy name 24 hours a day, only eating the prasadam from the temple, doing the parikrama every day, Govardhana parikrama, Vrindavan parikrama, everything I'll do regularly. But after a few days, something is telling you, look, I have to get back to the work in 3 weeks' time. The boss is waiting when I get back. All the papers are piled up or whatever work that has been left out, I have to complete that. So, just see how helpless you are. So, for some time you thought, I'll do this, but the very next moment, in a few days, the whole mind has changed. You're back here again. And when you come back for a few days, that spirit will be there in the mind. Then I spent a few good days in Vrindavanam and I had been to a few places. I had a good time. But then, again, back to the square one. The life goes on again. You see the helpless situation you are. You want to execute spiritual life. You are not able to do that. You go on and bathe in the Radhakund, Shyamakund everywhere. And you felt that, oh, at least this much I could do in this lifetime, this year I have done little bit at least. And come back with some satisfaction back here again. And the starts after a month and all, the whole purity, whatever little you have attained, they are gone. And then back into the same old games here. Continues. That's that. Now if you look at it another way, this is devotee's life I'm saying, not only other people. So devotees also get in this situation. Sometimes you are thinking that, alright, I am not able to, let me do the following. You are thinking in your mind that I have studied the Shastras and found out, now I should not be very attached to anything. I should give up my attachment to material life and everything and I should go. But you are unable to give up attachment to the material world. Material life will not let you go. Because as soon as you see the bills coming in, pouring in at home, immediately you start thinking, I have to pay these bills, I have to go to work. So the material attachment also is entanglement. That entanglement also will not allow you to escape from this situation. So in every point, mind is saying on one hand, I should be doing that, I should not be doing this. But on the other hand, circumstances are not allowing you to do it. It pulls you back into the same situation. More than all these things, it's more interesting than all these things is that
I've understood I'm not this body. That is the best understanding I had. Krishna is repeating, I read Bhagavad Gita all over and I understood one important thing from the very beginning. Krishna is saying, you are not this body. I've also understood. But as far as understanding is concerned, it is skin deep. It hasn't gone deeper than that. The moment my prasadam is delayed, my I am not this body is gone through the wind. I am the body, very much I am the body at that moment, isn't it? I am not the body. If somebody comes and tells you are starving and someone comes and tells you, Prabhu, why you are asking for prasadam? You are not this body, aren't you? Why you worry about it? Would you listen? I won't listen. I don't know about you. I will ask for the prasadam first. I will discuss that philosophy later. So this is our understanding of Krishna consciousness. This is the difficulty. Now you see the problem. From the same mind he is telling you, you are not this body. And the same mind is telling you, I need to have my prasadam on time. The same mind is telling you, go and sacrifice your life for Krishna consciousness in Vrindavanam. Same mind is telling you, come back and get back to work the next moment. One time mind is telling you, give up everything, go away from here. The next moment mind is telling you, no, you can't give up. You have to continue with the hammering here. So this crisis in the mind is exactly similar to what Arjuna was experiencing there. It's not much different than that. Arjuna was going through the same problem. He was thinking that he has no freedom to do anything. And this realization that he has no freedom to do anything, it is in this background that Bhagavad Gita has come into our, given to us by Krishna. Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita in this background, that what should I do in my life? This question is answered in the Bhagavad Gita. So when this crisis happens in life, all our plans get upset. We cannot execute any plan because you don't know what to do. And that is why Arjuna and an ordinary jiva, a living entity in this world, is not different. The jiva is facing exactly the same crisis like Arjuna. That is the reason why Bhagavad Gita is valid for all time to come, all places too. For all places and for all people, because all of us are in the same situation as Arjuna in this world. Our position is not different. Every single moment we are going through in this life, in the short span of life what we have here, it is the same crisis that is coming to us. And generally the tendency of a jiva or living entity is to get confused with this, and he does whatever he can. And not thinking too much about it. Then he will say to you like this. It's like, if you think too much about it, you won't get anywhere. So why you think too much? Do what you can and forget it. And this is what most of us do in this world at the end. Isn't it? And this is, this in order to come out of this crisis, this crisis in mind, that Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And because Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna for this reason only, that this knowledge in Bhagavad Gita will stay in this world. And people who come later on will understand the background in which Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna and derive the knowledge necessary to continue with their life in this world, how to make decisions in future. So when you go through this little bit more further, you will find we have got the five senses of knowledge, isn't it? Five senses of knowledge, which you all know what the senses are, indriyams they are referred to. Then you have got the mind and then you have got the intelligence as well. So generally they are compared to our own body, because these senses are the like the chariot. This body is like a chariot for us. A chariot as Krishna has given to us. And if you use this chariot properly, you can get out of this once for all. But you have to know that science, how to use this chariot. And that is what Bhagavad Gita is teaching us. This chariot has also got five horses. That is the five senses. This chariot has got the rein which is controlling the horses. That is called the mind. And behind that, there is what is called the intelligence, which is the charioteer. So normally you can see the comparison is extremely good, because the chariot is driven by the horses. Horses is controlled by the rein, and the charioteer or the intelligence is pulling the rein and controlling the chariot. If he controls properly, if the intelligence pulls the horses properly, it will go in the right direction. If you don't do that, if the charioteer does not know how to control the horses properly, what will happen? The chariot will run very fast somewhere here and there, eventually it will hit somewhere, topple, and then it will smash and finish everybody. And Shastras are saying that this human body is similar to that. That you have in your inside is this chariot called the body, which has got the five senses as the horses. The mind is the rein, and the intelligence is the charioteer. Intelligence is the charioteer. So what did Arjuna do in that situation? Arjuna realized this, that I cannot do anything at this point. The only thing I can do is hand over the control of the chariot to Krishna. That's what he did, isn't it? He handed over the chariot, controlled the chariot to Krishna. Krishna took control of the chariot, and the moment Krishna took control of the chariot, from then onwards, yatra yogeshwaro Krishna, yatra partho dhanurdhara, tatra shir vijayo bhodir, dhoni dharma dharmama. What Sanjay said about Krishna and Arjuna. The moment Krishna took control of the chariot never failed. It went in the right direction. So this is exactly what we have to do. We have to hand over the control of this chariot, known as material body, to Krishna. And when Krishna drives the chariot, our material body, then it will reach in the right spot, at the right place, at the right time. And otherwise, if you do not do that, that is what is expected of us to do, that like Arjuna did, he handed over the chariot to Krishna and asked Krishna to help. We also have, and that is why Krishna got the title as Parthasarathi. Parthasarathi means who was the charioteer of Arjuna, charioteer. So similarly, there is a Parthasarathi inside here also, in all of us. He is Krishna, the super soul. And if you hand over the driving this material, this chariot of us to Krishna, Krishna will drive that in the right direction. If you do not do that, the result will be one chariot you will lose, that is this body, you will get the next chariot ready for you, which is the next body. And you will get the next chariot. Again, you don't do that, you will continue the same process and smash that chariot also. After that chariot is finished, you will get the next chariot. So if you want to keep changing the chariots, then don't offer it to Krishna. But if you want to get out of this chariot business, continuously changing the chariots, hand over the rein into Krishna's hands. And if Krishna controls that, in other words, if Bhagavad Gita controls the life of a person, there is no more hankering and no more lamentation after that. Krishna controls the life. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna knows what is the right way to go. We do not know. Our position is, as I mentioned before, that we have no knowledge what is transcendental knowledge means. Through the five senses, shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham, the sound, touch, smell, all the five things. There are the sense objects. The five senses, like ears, nose, tongue, and eyes, all these things, they are the senses. Mind, intelligence. And in addition to that, the three states of existence, namely Jagrat, the waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep. All these things cannot understand the soul. They are not capable of realizing the soul. They cannot take spiritual knowledge by its capacity. They cannot understand the nature of the soul. It is the way it is structured. Because it is like that, the method, the transcendental process of realization is that you have to take the knowledge from a realized soul. A realized soul can impart you the knowledge. It is from his realization that he imparts to you that you develop spiritually. Otherwise it is not possible. So in order to understand the spiritual knowledge, develop the spiritual knowledge, these processes are mentioned. Actually, it is a very difficult subject to explain it, because when you translate many things into English, it does not convey the meaning what it is carrying in the Sanskrit language. Many instances I can tell you that. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita you will find there are statements avidya. Avidya means, what is the translation in English? Avidya is translated as ignorance, isn't it? Now, in normal conversation, you'll tell somebody, you are very ignorant, aren't you? You say like that, isn't it? But ignorance only means that much. But avidya means much more than that. Avidya means when one has not developed any spiritual understanding, spiritual knowledge, he is in avidya, he is in ignorance. But that is not, it's a call, you can say it as spiritual ignorance. If you say to somebody, you are in spiritual ignorance, it will become more complicated for that person. So we say you are in ignorance. But ignorance cannot convey the meaning of the word avidya. That is the difficulty. So you have to get to understand Bhagavad Gita. There is so many terminologies Krishna has used in the Bhagavad Gita. And each of those words, there is no replacement in any other language. This is the difficulty. Because therefore, we have to always use those words, because they are the only appropriate words. No matter how nicely you translate into any other language, it will not convey the transcendental message, what is coming through, flowing through those words when Krishna has spoken to Arjuna. One instance, Krishna is saying, every living entity in this world is covered by ignorance. You will ask Krishna, I am not covered by ignorance. Why are you saying to me like this? And that two lines are enough. If you just go back and sit and think about it, Krishna is telling us, by ignorance, everyone is covered. Everyone's knowledge is covered. Krishna says like this. Everyone who claims to have knowledge is covered by ignorance. Krishna says to Arjuna like this. From this you can understand, Krishna means something, that there is no knowledge in me. I have not got the knowledge. Why? Ajnana avridam jnanam. Jnanam, knowledge is covered by ajnanam, by ignorance. So, jnanam is covered by ajnanam. And we have to break through that ajnanam. And that is where Bhagavad Gita is important. And because it is such a deep subject, to get through it, to understand Bhagavad Gita, how it is trying to penetrate through this ignorance, what Krishna is calls as ajnanam. That ajnanam is the most difficult thing. So therefore, there are different processes. Shravanam. Starting with Shravanam is the process for everybody. Shravanam is the process. Now if we say to somebody Shravanam, Shravanam means hearing, isn't it? That's how we will understand. Shravanam means hearing. Hearing process. Now, we think if somebody tells you hearing means what? Hearing means, oh, I heard with my ears. That's all. That's my understanding, isn't it? Every one of us think Shravanam means hearing. But Shravanam is not hearing. Shravanam is, if you want to understand Shravanam, it will take 1 hour to explain what Shravanam means. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two instances in order to explain to us what Shravanam means. The word Shravanam means, strictly speaking, every one of us are atheists actually. Why we are atheists? Because we have no concept of the truth. Therefore we are called atheists. Nastikam. Nastikam means atheistic mentality is in us very much there, strongly. Now, as long as one has this atheistic nature in him, Nastikya Buddhi, in order to make him, this Shravanam process will change the person to such an extent, if he had heard from the right source, for the right amount of time and the right knowledge. Especially from the right source. If he has heard the thing from the right source, it will make him, and the very person who denies the existence of God today will come to the realization at one point, he will accept that there is only one thing that exists, that's God, nothing else. Today he is saying God doesn't exist. But tomorrow, after this proper Shravanam hearing process, he'll come to the understanding that there is only one thing that exists, and that is Krishna, nothing else. He'll come to that conclusion. This is the power of hearing. Now, you can imagine, if I say to somebody, you hear Prabhu Shravanam, what I said, yes, he said, I heard. But have you changed? No, I'm still the same. So why? Because there is no proper Shravanam. The Shravanam hasn't happened as it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Like this, every single term in Bhagavad Gita is so different than what we think it is. It is not what we think about it. The meaning is pregnant, much more deeper than what we understand. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when the 7 days, Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. He heard Srimad Bhagavatam 7 days in banks of the river, Ganga River. Ganga River, he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days. But have you noticed one thing? There were thousands of people who were listening to Srimad Bhagavatam there. Great, great sages. There's a list of them. Only the important personalities are mentioned in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? It's always like that. If you go for these big meetings, only they'll mention only the important personalities who have come. If you and me go there, they won't mention that, would they? They'll say, who is he after all? He's not to be mentioned. But if ministers have come, or the presidents have come, or big men, industrialists or businessmen, they have come, they'll say, oh, so-and-so were also there in the meeting. But similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find, when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit, Parikshit Maharaj heard Srimad Bhagavatam 7 days, and at the end of 7 days, only Parikshit Maharaj went to the spiritual world. So, Parikshit Maharaj heard Srimad Bhagavatam, everybody else heard Srimad Bhagavatam there, but only Parikshit Maharaj went back to into the spiritual world. Why? That is the difference in hearing. This is the difference in Shravanam. So you can see why Shravanam makes a difference. They've all heard Srimad Bhagavatam, but only Parikshit Maharaj went back to the spiritual world. The reason for that is, Srimad Bhagavatam was heard by Parikshit Maharaj the way it should be heard. The right understanding of how to hear something, that consciousness Parikshit Maharaj had. He did not eat anything for 7 days nor slept. Mind was intensely focused on Krishna. Because of the urgency behind, death was waiting there behind him. Whereas the rest of them were thinking, I still have a long time to go. I'll just listen, see what he has got to say. This was what the other's attitude was. Many of them who were present there, they were thinking, now what Sukadeva Goswami has to say, let us listen to him. And then they'll make some comment and they'll go home. That Shravanam is different than Parikshit Maharaj Shravanam is. Parikshit Maharaj was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in such a way that he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam at the end of that. In 7 days hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he went back to the spiritual world. That is the power of hearing or power of Shravanam. So you can see where the difference is. After Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, many years later, in Tungabhadra River, in Karnataka, Tungabhadra River on the banks, there was a Brahmana by name Atmadeva. That story is a famous story. We talked about it in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. The glorification of Bhagavatam in the Padma Puranam is associated with that story. That this Atmadeva, while very briefly mentioned the story, Atmadeva had to go through a very hard time. Eventually, he could not have children, and he got the mercy from a sannyasi who gave him a fruit. He took it home, gave it to his wife to eat the fruit, and said that she would become pregnant. She didn't eat it because she didn't want to have children. She handed it over to the cow, and the wife took the child of her sister and brought her up in disguise, and so many things happened. At the end, the son who was born from that Brahmana became very demoniac, and at the end the Brahmana left home and gave up his body in the forest later on. But that personality, he had a cousin who was born from the cow who has eaten the fruit, and he was known as Gokarnam. So this Gokarnam wanted to help his friend, his cousin, who was known as Dundugari. So Dundugari and Gokarnam together, they had a difficult time, because Dundugari, due to his sinful activities, he degraded so much, whereas Gokarnam was a devotee and he advanced so much. So eventually he found out that only by reading Srimad Bhagavatam to Dundugari, he will escape from the sinful reactions. So in order to do that, there was a meeting of the great sages, and in that Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So when Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, this Dundugari was traveling at that time in the form of a ghostly body. He has even lost his gross body because of his sinful activities. That's what happens when one engages in sinful activities. You don't even get a gross body. You have to live in a subtle body or a ghostly body, and you have to travel in that way. So he was doing that, and he was so much in distress that he was able to speak to his brother Gokarnam and asking him to save him. So Gokarnam decided to perform a recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam for him, which he did. And that recitation, there were thousands of people present there. And our Dundugari occupied also in a bamboo. He was sitting there in a bamboo tree. And for 7 days, Gokarnam recited Srimad Bhagavatam. And our Dundugari listened to Bhagavatam exactly like Parikshit was listening from Sukadeva Goswami. At the end of that Srimad Bhagavatam recitation, there was an aeroplane brought from Vaikuntha, sent for Dundugari to go back to the spiritual world. It was arranged for him to go back because he heard Srimad Bhagavatam properly as it should be heard. So you can see the difficulty. Shravanam means hearing like that. That is Shravanam. That seriousness in listening to Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita for that matter is required to understand. So when we don't understand Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, the reason for that is we have not developed that capacity to hear Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam properly, and that is why we are falling back. We have to understand it like that, not to think that Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam has any defects. They are the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore it is absolute. Krishna's words are absolute. So therefore, in this background, all I can say is that Arjuna Vishada Yogam is coming to an end, and Krishna now starts the instructions to Arjuna from the second chapter, which is one of the most important chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which we'll discuss next Sunday. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.